For 10 days, I was never away from her for even an hour, except at night. I could constantly look into her eyes, hold her hands, listen to her speak, accompany her everywhere. My love was like a profound and bottomless abyss, into which I kept sinking deeper and deeper, from which nothing could save me. We spent an afternoon on the meadow at the feet of the Venus statue. I was picking flowers and tossing them into Wanda's lap, and she was binding them into wreaths for adorning our goddess. Suddenly, Wanda gave me a peculiar, bewildering look that my passion blazed over my head like flames. Losing control of myself, I threw my arms around her and clung to her lips, and she pressed me against her heaving bosom. "Are you angry?" I then asked her. "I never get angry at anything that is natural," she replied. "I'm just worried that you're suffering." "Oh, I'm suffering terribly." "Poor friend," she brushed the tangled hair from my forehead. "Not because of me, I hope." "No," I answered. "And yet my love for you has turned into a kind of madness. I'm tormented day and night by the thought that I can lose you. Perhaps should lose you." "But you don't even possess me as yet," said Wanda, with the same moist, quivering, consuming eyes that had already once swept me away. Then she stood up, and her small, translucent hands placed a wreath of blue anemones on the white, curly hair of Venus. Half reluctantly, I put my arm around Wanda's waist. "I can't live without you anymore, you beautiful woman," I said. "Believe me, just this once, believe me. It's no claptrap, no fantasy. I feel deep in my innermost core that my life is tied to yours. If you leave me, I'll perish. I'll wither away." "That won't be necessary, for I love you," she took hold of my chin. "Silly." "But you're willing to be mine only under certain conditions. Well, I belong to you unconditionally." "That's not wise, Severin," she replied, almost startled. "Don't you know me yet? Don't you even want to know me? I am good if I am treated earnestly and reasonably, but if one submits to me too deeply, then I become arrogant." "Then be that. Be arrogant. Be despotic," I cried in utter exclamation. "Only be mine. Be mine forever." I lay at her feet with my arms around her knees. "This won't end well, my friend," she said earnestly, without stirring. "Oh, but it should never end," I cried excitedly, intensely. "Only death should separate us. If you can't be mine, all mine and forever, then I want to be your slave, serve you, tolerate anything from you. Only just don't push me away." "Pull yourself together," she said, leaning over and kissing my forehead. "I'm very fond of you, but that's not the way to conquer me, to hold on to me." "I'm willing to do anything you like. I just don't want to lose you," I cried. "Just not that. I can't stand the thought of it." "Stand up." I obeyed. "You are truly a strange person," Wanda went on. "So you want to possess me at any price?" "Yes, at any price. But what good would it do for you to possess me?" she mused. There was something lurking, something sinister in her eyes. "If I stopped loving you, if I belonged to someone else..." Cold shivers ran down my spine. I looked at her. She stood before me, so solid and so self-assured. And her eyes had a cold glint. "You see," she said, "you are terrified at the very thought." Suddenly her face beamed with a charming smile. "Yes. I'm horrified when I vividly imagine that a woman whom I love, who has requited my love, could give herself to another man without showing me the slightest compassion. But do I have a choice? If I love that woman, love her madly, should I proudly turn my back on her and let my boastful strength destroy me? Should I blow my brains out? I have two female ideals, If I can't find my noble, sunny ideal, a kind and faithful woman to share my life, then I won't put up with anything halfway, anything lukewarm. I would rather submit to a woman with no virtue, no fidelity, no compassion. Such a woman in her selfish grandeur is also an ideal. If I can't enjoy the full and total happiness of love, then I want to drain its torments, its tortures to the dregs. Then I want the woman I love to mistreat me, betray me, and the more cruelly the better. That too is a pleasure.
Are you insane? Said Wanda.
I love you with all my soul, I continued, with all my senses and so deeply that your nearness, your atmosphere are indispensable to me. And if I am to go on living, so choose between my ideals, madam. Make of me what you will, your husband or your slave.
Very good, said Wanda, knitting her small but vividly curving eyebrows. I find this highly amusing. To utterly control a man who interests me, who loves me. At least I won't lack for entertainment. You were imprudent enough to leave the choice up to me. This is my choice.
I want you to be my slave. I'm going to turn you into my plaything.
Oh, do that, I cried, half quaking, half delighted. If a marriage can be based only on equality, on compatibility, then the greatest passions, by contrast, arise from the opposites. We are such opposites, almost hostile to each other. That explains this love of mine, which is part hatred, part fear. In such a relationship, only one person can be the hammer and the other the anvil. I want to be the anvil. I can't be happy if I look down on my beloved. I want to be able to worship a woman, and I can only do so if she is cruel to me.
But Severin, Wanda retorted almost angrily. Do you think I'm capable of mistreating a man who loves me as much as you do, and whom I love?
Why not? If that makes me worship you all the more. We can truly love only what stands above us. A woman who subjugates us through beauty, temperament, intellect, willpower. A woman who becomes our despot.
So, you are attracted to what other people are repulsed by.
That's it. That's what's so bizarre about me.
Well, ultimately, there's nothing so distinctive or singular about all your passions. For who doesn't like beautiful fur? And everyone knows and feels the close kinship between voluptuousness and cruelty.
But with me, all this is intensified to the highest degree, I replied.
That means rationality has little power over you. And you are soft, yielding, and sensual by nature.
Were the martyrs also soft and sensual by nature?
The martyrs?
Quite the contrary. They were supra-sensual people who found joy in suffering, who sought the most dreadful agonies, even death, the way others seek pleasure. And that is the kind of person I am, madam. Supra-sensual.
Just make sure you don't become a martyr out of love. A martyr to a woman.
We were sitting on Wanda's small balcony in the warm, fragrant summer night, a twofold roof above us. First the green ceiling of vines, then the canopy of the sky, which was sown with countless stars. From the park came a soft and plaintive caterwauling, and I was perched on a footstool at the feet of my goddess, talking about my childhood.
And by then, all these singular tendencies had already crystallized in you? Asked Wanda.
Yes, indeed. I can't remember ever not having them.
Even in my cradle, as my mother subsequently told me, I was supersensual. I rejected the healthy breasts of the wet nurse and they had to feed me goat's milk. When I was a little boy, I had an enigmatic fear of women, but that was actually an intense interest in them. I was frightened by the gray vault, the penumbra of a church, and I panicked before the glittering altars and images of saints. On the other hand, I would secretly steal over, as if to a forbidden joy, to a plaster Venus that stood in my father's small library. I would kneel down and recite to her the prayers that had been inculcated in me, the Lord's Prayer, the Hail Mary, and Credo. One night, I left my bed in order to visit her. The sickle moon illuminated the way and shed a cold, wan blue light on the goddess.
I threw myself down before her and kissed her cold feet as I had seen our farmers do when they kissed the feet of the dead savior. I was seized with an uncontrollable yearning. I rose and embraced the beautiful cold body and kissed the cold lips. Now I was overcome by a profound terror and I fled. And in my dreams, the goddess stood in front of my bed and threatened me with her raised arm. I was sent to school at an early age, and so I shortly began gymnasium, where I passionately seized upon everything that the ancient world promised to reveal to me. I was soon more familiar with the gods of Greece than with the religion of Jesus. Together with Paris, I gave Venus the fateful apple. I saw Troy burn, and I followed Odysseus on his wanderings. The primal images of all beautiful things sank deep into my soul, and so at a time when other boys act crude and obscene, I displayed an insuperable abhorrence for all that was vile, common, and unsightly. And the thing that struck the maturing adolescent as particularly vile and unsightly was the love for women as it was first shown to him in its full vulgarity. I avoided my contact with the fair sex. In short, I was insanely super sensual. When I was about 14, my mother hired a charming chambermaid. Young, pretty, with a curvaceous figure. One day, while I was studying my Thucydides and enthusing about the virtues of the ancient Germanic tribes, the maid was sweeping my room. Suddenly, she stopped, leaned towards me, broom in hand, and two full, fresh, delicious lips touched mine. The kiss of the Morris little cat sent shivers up and down my spine, but I brandished my Germania like a shield against the seductress and indignantly stormed out of the room. Wanda burst into loud laughter. You are truly one of a kind, but do go on. Another episode from that period is unforgettable, I continued. Countess Sobel, a distant aunt of mine, was visiting my parents. She was a beautiful, majestic woman with a charming smile, but I hated her, for the family regarded her as a Messalina, and my behavior towards her was as bad, nasty, and awkward as could be. One day, my parents went to the district seat. My aunt decided to make use of their absence and take me to task. Unexpectedly, she entered in her fur-lined casabaca, followed by the cook, the kitchen maid, and the little cat that I had spurned. Wasting no time, they grabbed me, and overcoming my violent resistance, they bound me hand and foot. Next, with a wicked smile, my aunt rolled up her sleeves and began laying into me with a heavy switch. She hit me so hard that she drew blood, and for all my heroic valor, I finally screamed and wept and begged for mercy. She then had me untied, but I was forced to kneel down, thank her for the punishment, and kiss her hand. Now, just look at the super sensual fool. The switch held by a beautiful, voluptuous woman who looked like an angry monarch in her fur jacket first aroused my desire for women. From then on, my aunt seemed like the most attractive woman on God's earth. My Cantonian severity, my timidity with women, were simply nothing but the most sublime sense of beauty. Sensuality now became a sort of culture in my imagination, and I swore not to squander its holy sensations on an ordinary creature, but to save them for an ideal woman. If possible, the goddess of love herself. I was very young when I began studying at the university in the capital where my aunt resided. My room resembled that of Dr. Faustus. Everything was cluttered and chaotic. Towering shelves crammed with books I had gotten dirt cheap after haggling with a Jewish dealer in Zarvonica. Globes, atlases, files, celestial charts, skulls, animal skeletons, busts of great men. At any moment, Mephistopheles, as an itinerant scholastic, might have stepped forth from behind the large green stove. I studied everything higgledy-piggledy, unsystematically, promiscuously. Chemistry, alchemy, literature, astronomy, philosophy, law, anatomy, and history. I read Homer, Virgil, Ossian, Schiller, Goethe, Shakespeare, Cervantes, Voltaire, Moliere, the Quran, the cosmos, Casanova's memoirs. I grew more and more confused, eccentric and super sensual every day. In my mind, I always pictured a beautiful female ideal, and now and then, amid my skeletons and my leather-bound tomes, she would appear like a vision, reclining on roses surrounded by cupids. Sometimes she wore Olympian attire and had the severe white face of the plaster Venus. Sometimes she had voluptuous brown braids, the laughing blue eyes, and the ermine-trimmed red velvet casabaca of my beautiful aunt. One morning when she again emerged in full, laughing grace from the golden mist of my imagination, I went to see Countess Sobel, who gave me a friendly, indeed hearty welcome, receiving me with a kiss that made all my senses reel. She must have been close to 40 by now, but like most of those diehard demi-mondaines, she was still desirable. She always wore a fur-lined jacket, this one in green velvet with brown stone marten, and none of the severity that had once delighted me was discernible in her. Quite the contrary, she felt so little cruelty towards me that without further ado, she gave me permission to worship her. She had all too soon discovered my supersensual foolishness and innocence, and she enjoyed making me happy. And I was truly as blissful as a young god. What pleasure it was for me to kneel down and be allowed to kiss her hands, which had once chastised me. Ugh, what wonderful hands, so beautifully shaped, so fine and full and white and with such darling dimples. I was actually in love only with those hands. I played with them, let them rise and sink in dark fur. I held them up against a flame and could not see enough of them. Wanda involuntarily looked at her hands. I noticed and couldn't help smile. You can tell from the following facts how greatly dominated I was by the supersensual. In regard to my aunt, I was in love only with the cruel switching I had received from her. And in regard to that young actress I courted some 2 years later, I was in love only with her roles. I next had a crush on a very respectable lady who feigned an unapproachable virtue but eventually betrayed me with a wealthy Jew. You see, because I was deceived and made a fool of by a woman who shamed the most rigorous principles, the most ideal feelings, I now ardently hate those kinds of poetic and sentimental virtues. Give me a woman who's honest enough to tell me I'm a pompadour, a Lucretia Borgia, and I'll worship her. Wanda stood up and opened the window. You have a peculiar way of inflaming the imagination, exciting all nerves, making the pulse beat faster. You provide vice with an aura so long as it's honest. Your ideal is a bold and brilliant courtesan. Oh, you're the kind of man who can thoroughly corrupt a woman.